This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklands Radio.
Hello and welcome to Just Women, the weekly talk show on Brooklands Radio. It's Just Women on our show for the next hour. We'll be talking to some very interesting, inspiring local women. I'm Sharon Finch and presenting alongside me today is Anne Twist. Hi, Anne.
Hi, Sharon, and it's great to be working with you. And today on the show, we have three very interesting guests. We have Beverly Wilkinson from Nuggets of Learning, Zoe Payne from Baby Sleep Dust, and Sue Seekins from the Surrey Law Society. So if you'd like to join in with any questions or comments during or after the show, please do email studio@brooklandsradio.co.uk. And as usual, we'd love to hear from you.
Thanks very much, Anne. And so to our first guest, I'm delighted to introduce Bev Wilkinson from Nuggets of Learning. Welcome to the show, Bev.
Hi, welcome.
We normally ask our guests how they came to be where they're at today. Nuggets of Learning is a training and learning development business. Could you just give us a bit of background about yourself?
Yeah, sure. I've worked in learning and development for 15 years. I started off the HR route and then was lucky enough to work for the Walt Disney Company. So I've heard all the jokes about working for the big mouse, working for the big cheese. And when I worked at Disney, the HR department was large enough that you had a comp and bends department, you had a learning and development department. So I was delivering courses in-house. And then I had two children and decided actually I'd like to have my own business. And so that's what I did. And I started Nuggets.
And looking at your website, you say, welcome to Nuggets of Learning. We bring learning to life, making it, it's a motivating, memorable, collective occasion. What's different about your learning platform?
Well, When I was at Disney, one of the things that I used to love was that they had themed boardrooms, so that you used to go into the Tarzan room or the princess room. And obviously, if you're delivering a course, that's going to make it far more exciting. And when you look into accelerated learning, which is how you can get messages to the brain as quickly as possible, one of the ways of doing that is to appeal to all of the five senses. So I was passionate that when I set up the company, it was going to be different to other training companies. I hated that when you walk into a training room and there's this sort of blotter and the Bic pen and the glass of water. So when you walk into a Nuggets course, you are hit with flip chart posters, always with the welcome. And coloured post-it notes and just basically a colourful experience. And then the training itself is very interactive and lively.
So, sorry, when you say interactive, so how many in a room, for example, typically?
Okay, we do a minimum of 6 to a maximum of 12 to get the level of discussion, because learning really happens when you own the learning, and you only own the learning when sort of discussion starts to happen. So that's why it's the numbers are small. And I love to do 90 minutes of learning is my favourite
workshop. Oh, that's the nugget, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes.
So you've got 90 minutes, you've got between 6 and 12 people, and they're really interacting with each other. They're not just sitting listening to someone at the front of the room.
Yeah, absolutely. And we do that by posing questions that, I mean, I often think that if you attend 90 minutes, obviously you're not going to have all the theory. What happens is it acts as a disturb. So, I mean, now we can learn in so many different ways. And so you come on the workshop, which, you know, might seem quite a formal piece of learning, but in actual fact, it engages you. And because you're engaging all your senses, you go away, you might read a book afterwards, you might Google something afterwards, you might connect with another delegate, but it opens your eyes to learning, which is what we get really excited about, really.
Are your clients mainly corporate clients, or have you got small independent businesses as well?
A mixture. Obviously, the corporates, I'd be lying, but they play quite well. and also corporates as well. They are ready for this learning. What I found harder is sometimes when you break into new businesses and they're like, oh my gosh, there's no PowerPoint and this woman's just going to stand in front of a flip chart and move around the room, they can be quite unnerved. Whereas corporates have kind of done every learning and development team build under the sun and they kind of get excited and hit the ground running. So it can be a mixture, yeah.
I think that's quite exciting, actually. I've just finished working for a leading estate agent and I see that you have a leading estate agent as well, your clients. It's not the same one. We used to go into a room and someone would put on a PowerPoint and we'd sit there all day and take notes when we were shown on a large screen how to operate this piece of software, and you'd go away and, you know, the amount that you've absorbed is minuscule because you haven't been involved, you've just sat and watched. So this sounds, you know, like music to my ears, to be honest.
Well, the brain can only really concentrate for 45 minutes at a time, so to get with the 90 minutes I can get two or three big chunks of theory through, because you've basically got two 45 minute chunks or two 45 minute pieces put together. So it's kind of like you say, I mean, basically companies are wasting money by taking people away from their desks for the whole day, whereas if you have these 90 minutes, if you book say five of them and you get nuggets coming back in every 2 weeks, then you're kind of embedding the learning and you're getting the discussion, you're creating an environment of learning because everybody's then talking about it, and it works really effectively.
And you go to them, don't you? Is that right?
Yeah, go to them. So currently somebody has bought a personal impact series. So they've bought five covering developing emotional intelligence, assertiveness, and they'll have bought five 90 minutes and they want them to be spread over a sort of 6 week period. So Easter gets in the way, unfortunately, but they're going to cover them through through that period. So.
Are the courses designed around personal development and motivation rather than, say, technical training from a certain corporate?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's all your soft skills. So it's about changing behaviours. So our sort of mantra is basically helping businesses to think and then ultimately work differently. Because if you start thinking about changes that you want to make, then ultimately your behaviour will change. But no one can change your behaviour unless you want to change it yourself.
Do you find that in that environment where people are being interactive, you know, you mentioned assertiveness training, do you actually see that there are some people who need the training because they're not getting involved? How do you sort of bring them out, you know, because I would imagine it's quite hard to sort of speak up in an environment where you don't know maybe some of the others in the room.
In terms of it comes down to you in terms of, you know, as the trainer or the facilitator about engaging with them. So one of the things I always used to hate on training courses myself is when they do that creeping dead, like they say, right, Anne, we're going to ask you to introduce yourself.
And
say something interesting about yourself. And by the time it comes around to you, everybody's lost the will to live. And you're so scared about, oh, what can I say that's interesting about myself?
Yeah.
So we always make sure we create really, really good comfort levels. So people introduce themselves in maybe, you know, a more relaxed way in terms of, but it's not that sort of, you know, cringe of putting somebody on the spot. It's a more relaxed sort of discussion.
That's quite interesting. I heard a story recently, a friend's son got a job at Unilever on the grad scheme, which is hugely competitive. And it was a bit like you've described, creeping dead. Tell us something interesting about yourself that you've done. When it got to him, he was petrified and he came out with something which afterwards he thought was nonsense. He got the job because it was actually funny what he said, even though he felt it was nonsense. All those people had come out with a mantra of, yes, well, I went to India and I opened an orphanage and, you know, just the kind of robotic answer. So it's quite interesting, actually, what you said.
Yeah, I think people want to see a human element as well. I mean, a similar thing. My son was interviewed and they said, oh, we can spot you haven't been interview trained, which is like bizarre. So, yeah, you want a human quality and you can only do that with comfort levels in terms of just being engaging. I sometimes think of myself, it's a bit like being a host of a really good party. You want people to be there. So why would you make them feel uncomfortable?
Do you ever get any resistance from companies that are a bit more stuck in their ways and, you know, don't like the soft approach? Because is this soft approach quite a new approach for corporate businesses?
I mean, certainly training soft skills isn't new. In terms of maybe a training company turning up and not delivering PowerPoint, might be quite something they might be quite resistant to initially. But in terms of most companies I work with, I've obviously had a good brief from them. They're very clear as to the format it's going to take. If I did receive any resistance, one company was buying quite a lot of nuggets. What I did was I did a taster. So I gave them a 45-minute taster so they knew exactly what they were getting before we went in and delivered each of them. So,
do you find any difference in gender with their responses, or is that a bit of a stereotype?
No,
sorry,
actually,
Graham, yeah. I have to ask the question.
Yeah, no. In terms of, funnily enough, when I used to do some associate work with other training companies, and they were putting me into a company that will remain nameless, but there was a lot of, it was a male audience in terms of, and they were engineers, and they said, Bev, how do you think the delegates are going to respond to you? And I didn't actually kind of deal with the job any differently to how I would any other audience. And in terms of, yeah, I was received exactly the same way. Because I think if you create an environment where people want to learn, then you will have learners with you. We often describe them as holidays hostages and explorers, and we want to turn them all into explorers.
And your website mentions that 300% on average interacting all five senses achieves a huge improvement in the speed and effectiveness of learning, which seems to me that if that was rolled out to all schools in the country, that would be pretty impressive.
Yeah, and they certainly are trying in terms of, I mean, schools have social seating now. You'll notice that the furniture is coloured. They have interactive whiteboards, although sadly the whiteboard's still at the front. It would be fun if they had, you know, flip charts around the room. But they are using different methods. I mean, my son told me a brilliant story about his history teacher reenacting a battle the other day. So, I mean, things like that are brilliant if they're kind of using their senses. And certainly, you know, I haven't instigated a battle on nuggets yet, but I've certainly tried different ideas of making it as interactive as possible.
And is this something that is the way that it was sort of approached at Disney, or is this something you've developed yourself?
A bit of both. In terms of, I mean, we used to do a fantastic induction program that was called Welcome to Disney. And I mean, obviously, working for a huge corporate or US corporate, we had loads of film trailers, and then we actually had Mickey come in as well. So we had to dance with Mickey. You have to remember, though, in terms of some of these guys had just started at Disney, and they were very cynical about the whole idea of dancing with Disney. Can't think why. But it was fantastic. So some of that sort of like being different was definitely opened my eyes. There's lots of research out there in terms of, there's a guy called Lex McKee that's written a book on accelerated learning. Colin Rose is very famous, and you can read lots around it. So it's, but in terms of, yeah, the nugget approach, I've worked really hard on to make it very special.
What is colourful coaching?
Well, in terms of, as facilitators, you always have to wear colour. So that's one of my things. And in terms of the colour around the room as well. So as I say, like the post-it notes, we use scented markers as well, which is another sensory experience. And the colours that you get from these markers are fantastic as well. So it's not your black, red and green. We have pink, we have purple, we have orange. So,
and it's not a kind of a memory association thing then. So I was using a pink marker when I was taught about X, and you go away and remember it a bit, like, you know, I can remember my training at Disney because Mickey came in. Is that all part of the sort of sensory experience then? Or it smelt like lavender when we were talking about whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in terms of, like Gordon Ramsay says, taste holds memory longer than experience. So it's that whole, yes, in terms of where were you when you had that taste sensation? Where were you when you had that smell sensation? So everything combines. And if you're appealing to all five senses, then that's brilliant because one of them will connect. Some of us are more visual than others. Some of us are more auditory than others. And some of us are more kinesthetic than others. So if you tip into your sensory experience, hasten to add, it will be really, really memorable for you. So,
have you had much experience of dealing with special educational needs such as dyslexia that you have to adapt any of your training programmes?
No, I haven't, no. And I know a lot of the work they do is quite similar in terms of, getting that memory and hooking it to the learning. I haven't myself, no. I mean, I'm just there trying to obviously get businesses to see that learning can be colourful. And when you say colourful as well, I guess I should say as well, it is obviously metaphorically as well, because the discussion is colourful in itself and the learning is colourful in itself, as well as actually the tangible colour being in the room.
Yeah, I've just wondered what the theory is behind it, really, but I can understand it. I'm just starting to want to know what food you serve while you're, you know.
I want to know what the smells are of the pens.
Oh, well, there's always a prize if you can guess the scent of the turquoise pen, because that was always a bit random. They ran out of ideas, I think, when they came to turquoise.
After they've done your course, do you encourage them to look back at the notes that you give them or revisit some of the concepts that you've explored?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I obviously believe in lifelong learning, and that's what we want to encourage delegates to do. So I would, in terms of, they have some handouts, but on the handouts is recommended reading. Also, I encourage people to watch TED Talks if it's relevant. I mean, they're fantastic. I mean, we're so lucky now that learning is just everywhere. And again, going back to kids, you can see it with kids. I mean, my daughter said that her RS teacher uses YouTube. So I mean, there's so much that we can absorb. So I give them the name of the theorists and say, right, you know, go and explore it even further. But I mean, the most important thing is that they make the learning practical as well, so they can apply it.
And you have some kind of one-to-one training between the sessions, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like the Rolls Royce.
Is it?
If they buy the nuggets, so they buy the 90-minute sessions, and then before the next one, we have a one-to-one where we say, right, okay, how has the learning made a difference? That's the ultimate when
that's
companies
the ultimate package.
Buy. Yeah, yeah, when they buy the whole thing.
Okay.
Well, I can't quite believe it, but it's the end of the interview.
Already?
It's gone so quickly. It's been fantastic. I love the idea of nuggets. I just think it's just so unique. And good luck with the rest of your workshops. Before we go, could you share with our guests any advice, maybe perhaps on learning and development concepts?
Well, I guess in terms of, for me, the brain always absorbs best when it's having fun. So in terms of make learning as fun as possible. And even if the facilitator hasn't done it for you, then do it for yourself. And learn where you're comfortable as well. So make yourself as relaxed as possible. A relaxed and fun brain will absorb as much as possible.
I'm going to put that on a little post-it note. Keep it by me when I'm at work. Could you confirm what your website or email address is if anybody wants to contact you?
Yeah, sure. It's www.nuggetsoflearning.co.uk.
Thank you very much for coming on the show. That was Beverly Wilkinson from Nuggets of Learning. We're now going to a quick ad break, but don't go away because we'll be back talking to Zoe Payne from Baby Sleep Dust.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklands Radio.
Are you tackling a DIY project? Are you unsure about what you need? Would some expert advice come in handy? Then head on down to Fetcham Home Hardware at 226 Cobham Road, Fetcham. We are a family-run business based in the community and offer a really friendly and knowledgeable service. We know that you will be amazed at the comprehensive range of products on offer for DIY and the home. You'll find tools, paints, cleaning materials, light bulbs, heaters, kindling logs, coal, our very handy key-cutting service, and lots more. And if you mention you have heard this ad on Brooklands Radio, you will receive a 10% discount on the spot. So whatever your DIY or home requirements, visit your very own Aladdin's Cave. Fetcham Home Hardware in Cobham Road.
Hair Mechanics is Surrey's premier hair and beauty salon group, with two superior salons, one in the heart of West Byfleet and the second in the Bourne Valley Garden Centre of Addlesden. Hair Mechanics offers hairstyling and finishing, beauty and holistic therapies, nail treatments, tanning and electrolysis. For our office promotions, contact information and more, please see our website hairmechanics.co.uk or call 01932 350877. Hair Mechanics, Surrey's premier hair and beauty salon group.
If you love film music of all kinds, then Hunter's Hollywood Hits and Brit Flicks is the show for you. Every Thursday, escape into the exciting world of the movies with soundtracks that transport you right into the films. From special shows dedicated to legendary composers to theme shows dedicated to different genres, you can hear a mixture of classic themes as well as well-known songs that feature in films. So, all you film fans, be sure to catch Hunter's Hollywood Hits and Brit Flicks with me, Suzanne Hunter, every Thursday at 9 p.m, only on Brooklyn's Radio.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklyn's Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklynsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklyn's Radio. Just Women is just what you need.
Welcome back to the show. I'm now delighted to welcome Zoe Payne from Baby Sleep Dust. Welcome, Zoe.
Hi, thank you.
No problem at all. Good to have you on the show. Now, obviously, you're an expert in advising parents on getting their children or babies to sleep. What sort of got you involved in that to start with?
Well, my own daughter didn't sleep. So by the time that she was 9 months old, she'd been waking up every hour of the night for about 6 months. And I was doing a lot of Googling in the middle of the night while I was up all night. And looking at, you know, ways to change things and wondering what had happened and where it had all gone wrong. And so really did quite a lot of research myself and found I had a real interest in it. And I started to work with her on how to fix things, but decided to do a couple of courses as well just to... Well, just to know that I was doing the right thing, really. So yeah. It was really, to start with, it was just personal gain that I was doing it for.
And how long ago was that? How old is she now?
She's 2.5 now.
Okay.
So she was 9 months old. It's coming up for 2 years ago that it all started. Yeah. And
you've since had another child, I think?
Yeah, my little boy's 3 months old now.
And so that's been hopefully a completely different story.
Very different already. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And is that because you know now what to do differently, or is he just a different baby?
I always said initially, after the experience with my daughter, that until I could guarantee that I could get a baby to sleep, I wouldn't agree to have another one, to be honest. Obviously, all babies are different.
Yeah.
But I knew, I absolutely was 100% sure that there were certain things that I could do to start with, at the, you know, the start of his life, that would ensure a very different route that we would take. Yeah. With his sleep, yeah.
And looking back, was it Myla, your daughter?
Yes, that's right.
What would you do differently now, then, do you think, with her?
Well, where I went wrong was, it sounds awful, but I was responding to her all the time. So any noises that she made in those early months, I was immediately picking her up and breastfeeding in order to get her back to sleep, which is the quickest thing for a lot of people to do. So she just started to build a habit around that, and you know, unfortunately they pick up things very quickly. So she started to recognize that if she woke up and cried, I would respond, I would breastfeed her, which ultimately is what babies do want. It's the best comfort that they ever get, really. And so they do it more and more. And so actually one wake up a night turns into two, turns into three, four, five, six, seven. And it sort of snowballs so quickly. And I think a lot of people end up like this. Because they don't want to leave their children. And the thing is, you can respond to them, but you don't, you know, not necessarily in that way. And you can make sure that you're also at the same time encouraging them to go back to sleep independently. That's the most important thing, basically.
How did you hear about child sleep advisors? Because I'd never heard of it when my children were young.
Well, like I say, yeah, doing so much Googling in the middle of the night. So I came across a few names of people that other people were recommending. But I felt through my own research, I felt like it was something that I really wanted to find out more about anyway. And then I started helping a few friends while I was doing my courses and friends of friends. And it was all very successful, and it kind of developed from there. And one of the things that I have done myself, which I'm not sure that other people, or some I'm sure do, offer, but I've put together this workshop for new parents and expectant parents, actually, for teaching them in the first 3 months how to work towards that the good sleep habits before their baby reaches 6 months old, which is when, you know, 6 months is, it tends to be the mark where you're going into, they've actually got bad habits already ingrained, and then you have to go into a sleep training environment and take away the bad habits. So encouraging the good habits in the first, you know, in the sort of 3 to 6 month mark is a great way to start, basically.
And do you link up with NCT or health advisors? What's the way in to talk to the majority of parents?
Yeah, I've given taster sessions to quite a few NCT groups. They do allow other people to go in and talk to their members. I go around a lot of baby groups, baby and toddler groups, and give taster sessions again, and really just open to as much as out there. I feel like the best thing I did was learning how to deal with it, with the lack of, you know, how to turn around the bad sleep into a good night's sleep. And it turns you into a different person. Mm. Basically, you feel like you can deal with life again when you're sleeping. And, you know, I felt like a better mother once my daughter was sleeping, because I was sleeping. Mm. And I was able to be the person I wanted to be around her.
Yeah, I mean, frankly, I'm surprised that you had the energy to Google all these different websites in the middle of the night, because you must have been exhausted.
One of the things I really shouldn't have been doing was Googling, because one of the things is, you know, any kind of...
light.
The light, exactly. Yeah. The phone light, the iPad, anything like that. So I did quite quickly stop. But, in those first couple of months, I did a lot of it. And I started off, I had all the books, which are really useful. I did have all of them ready when I was getting ready to have my daughter. But once she arrived, I just didn't have the time to read them properly and to take them in. And, it just snowballed. Yeah. But no, it was the best thing that I've done, and I've helped a lot of people since then, and that's an amazing feeling.
Does the phrase control crying still exist?
It does, absolutely, yeah.
Is that part of it, that you have to leave them for a, you know, it's a limited period just to go over to sleep? Or
I work with such a broad range of methods, and what I do is I talk in depth to the parents that I'm working with, and I get an understanding of their needs, of their routines, of the baby's needs, of you know, diet, and you know, all sorts of things. Everything goes into one sleep plan, and so each sleep plan is tailor-made to that family that I'm working with. So some parents do come to me and say, I'm ready to let them cry. Mm. and that's fair enough, and that's the route that they want to take. I do always say, you know, you need to be really sure that that's what you want to do, because it's tough. I mean, any sleep training can be tough, and you need to know that your partner, if you've got one, is 100% behind you, because one of the worst things that can happen is that you're 3 or 4 nights in and you've done all that work and somebody else goes, oh my God, it's not working. So it's just going, you know, we're going to have to go back to the drawing board, and actually you've done all that work and you could be just ready to get past that.
I've seen that on Super Nanny.
God, I haven't watched that for years. But yeah.
Neither have I, actually.
I guess a big part of this is how many other children in the family, where everybody sleeps. Does somebody need to get a good night? Therefore, the mother's picking up the baby to keep it quiet so that dad can get a good night's sleep to get up to work, or something like that. You know, I'm sure there's plenty of that going on, isn't there?
Absolutely. So again, that's one of the big aspects of the this sort of general questionnaire that I give to people.
Yeah.
And then talk through everything more in depth. So if there are siblings, if, you know, if the one half of the couple is needing a particular night's sleep or somebody's doing shift works, who's going to be responding to the baby and how? So like I people tend to go for the gentler methods. There is normally some crying involved, which is the baby waking up and crying, and that means people are going to wake up. But other children, actually, once they're asleep, they tend to sleep through quite a lot. You can get light sleepers, and it's about, you know, maintaining a restful rest of the household where you can. But there are ways of working with siblings as well, you know, to make sure that it's as easy as possible with everybody involved.
So really routine is key, so that
routine,
you do the same thing, because then the baby will just know this is how it is.
Yes, absolutely. Routine's really key. And actually, I think that by the time you get to a second or third child, your routine is quite set in stone with your first child. And so it does become a bit easier, in a way, to get them used to, get the, you know, the baby that you're working with, get them used to day and night, you know, the difference between day and night, and when they have their longer sleep, when they have their naps, that sort of thing.
What about, obviously, we've just had the clocks changing.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make much of a difference to babies when they're in a routine?
It can do. Yeah, it really can do. So what I have been telling my clients is that, and, you know, if people are listening now to and they've experienced a really bad start to the day for the last couple of days, is work towards changing your timings just by 10 minutes every day or every other day, just so that you're waking up at 10 minutes earlier, and you're doing the nap times 10 minutes earlier, and then you're doing your bedtime 10 minutes earlier, and move that towards that hour change, just so that they get used to it. And within a week you'll be back on track.
And obviously a big part of babies, or I thought it was babies waking up in the night, is because they're hungry. Are you saying a lot of it's down to wanting comfort then?
Yeah, well, babies wake up anyway. Their sleep cycles are very short. They tend to be only about 50 minutes. So they will stir after that time. Often them sending themselves back into this, a deeper sleep, can be noisy. And so we then respond to them. And then, you know, I don't want to put the blame on parents, because it's just a very natural thing to do, is to respond to your baby. But we can mistake the noises that they're making when they're actually still slightly asleep, to them needing us. And that's where we actually interrupt their sleep even more than what needs to happen. And then it becomes a habit. So they do that once or twice a night. And they've woken up for, you know, at those times for two nights to three nights, and it just becomes more of a regular habit.
Your website's got quite a lot of really nice testimonials, and the main message seems to be the fact that you're on the telephone and that you can provide encouragement, and that you listen and provide individual support, which parents with a baby for the first time feel a bit lost.
Yeah.
So it seems that, you know, that it's really helping, and the messages are very encouraging, so I would encourage people to read those, because I'm sure some of the scenarios are quite common for other
people. Absolutely, although all babies are different, they'll all respond to different things in different ways, and also parents are very different as well. So I mean, like I say, there's no one size fits all approach, definitely not. But it's a good idea to read those, because one of the things that I struggled with when I was waking up every hour of the night was I felt like I'd missed the mark on making a change, and actually that's never the case. It can always be fixed and made better. It's just about finding the right way that, you know, it's going to suit the parents and the child, and that's
Where did you get the name from? I love the name Baby Sleep Dust. It's just so calming.
Very dusty.
How did you decide on that name?
I think that me and my sister just threw some ideas around, and we sleepy dust was, for some reason, we remembered that from childhood a lot. I don't know why. I think that I'm sure my parents had some sort of a story about a fairy coming and putting sleepy dust in our eyes, and we just kind of came up with that quite quickly, actually. And then, you know, it's a lovely name. I'm not sure it says exactly what it does on the tin, but I hope it gives enough of an idea.
Have you had any links with Mumsnet, or do people post things and you can respond to them with your business?
I do give advice on threads, but I don't tend to. Well, with those sorts of things, websites like that Mumsnet and NetMums, you're not allowed to advertise yourself.
Oh, right, okay.
Unless you're paying for advertising.
Right.
So
yeah.
I have given off advice, free advice, definitely. And I've done a little bit of advertising as well with them. But you have to be very careful about what you're saying,
yeah,
and how you're not promoting yourself, as the case
yeah
may be.
Yeah.
So I have to be quite careful with that.
And obviously you do some courses by Skype. Is that as successful as going into a house and seeing the sort of family dynamic?
It absolutely is, yes. It's really whatever people prefer. I think that because I can do things over the phone or by Skype, it means that both parents can be there because they can do it in out of work hours.
Yeah.
Weekends, evenings, which is it tends to be when I do a lot of my work. I can go to people's houses, obviously, within reason, but actually a lot of people prefer to not have somebody come into their house.
Oh, do they? Okay.
And just be able to do things, you know, in the relaxed environment that they know, especially when babies are involved. I think that, you know, people coming in can disrupt routines, and it can make babies and young children a little bit aware of change. So it just seems to be the preferred way, generally. But yeah, I do go into people's houses as well.
Yeah. Zoe, it's about time that we're going to an ad break, but before we go, is there any advice that you could give to our listeners if they've got young babies and they're going to struggle tonight to get some sleep?
Well, I talked about the time change. I think the main thing is, you know, before you do anything, any kind of sleep training, pick what you're going to do, pick the method that you're going to do and stick to it, and make sure that you know what you're doing and research it really well. That's what I would say.
Great advice. I wish I'd have been sitting here 15 years ago or whatever. I can't remember.
Yeah, 20 years ago. I wish I'd known, Zoe, that's for sure.
Can you confirm to the listeners your contact details if they want to contact you?
Yes, absolutely. My email is zoe@babysleepydust.co.uk, and website is www.babysleepydust.co.uk.
Thank you very much. That was Zoe from Baby Sleepy Dust. Going to a quick ad break, and afterwards we'll be speaking to Sue Seekins, who is CEO of Surrey Law Society. So please stay with us.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklands Radio.
I'm so glad you're open.
Thank goodness you're here.
Do you ever close?
Did you know the pharmacy at 20 Church Street, Weybridge, is open 100 hours every week to meet your immediate medical needs? We're here for you from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. weekdays, 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. Saturdays, and 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Sundays. Our friendly and knowledgeable team can provide you with the advice you need, as well as helping you with repeat prescriptions, all the over-the-counter products you would expect, and if you can't get in to visit us, we will deliver to you. The Pharmacy, 20 Church Street, Weybridge. We're here when you need us, 100 hours every week.
Do you need an accountant or a part-time financial controller who understands your business problems and is willing to work with you in the here and now rather than telling you what you did after you did it? You need to talk to Goddard's Accountants. Goddard's will deal with the hassle, leaving you to expand your business. And as we've been in our business for some 40 years, you know you're in good hands. Phone us on 020 8941 2187 for the expert advice you require. Goddard's Accountants, West Molesey. We take away your pain so you get the gain.
When you're looking to send important documents and packages, don't settle for second best. Choose Mailboxes etc. in Church Street, Weybridge. We offer you high street access to fast, reliable and internet trackable delivery services from world-class couriers, including UPS, FedEx, Parcelforce and DHL. We also offer a range of Royal Mail services and can pack your shipment so that it arrives safely. Around the corner, around the country or around the world, big or small, Mailboxes etc. in Weybridge can collect, pack and ship it all.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklands Radio. Just Women is just what you need.
Welcome back to Just Women with myself, Sharon Finch, and my co-presenter, Anne Twist. I'm delighted to welcome now Sue Seekins, who is CEO of the Surrey Law Society. Thanks so much for joining us today, Sue.
Thank you, and thank you for inviting me in to talk to you.
Could you just tell the listeners how you came to be the CEO of Surrey Law Society?
Okay, it's quite a long story, so I will try and cut it as short as I can. I'm not a lawyer. My background is in project management, and so I was brought in to try and turn the society into more of a service, a business, to try and change its finances, which weren't particularly exciting at the time, and to really push up the membership and improve the services we provided and extend them. And my husband's a lawyer, so I actually knew the society fairly well as the other half, but I really decided that it was something I would like to do, and after interview they decided they thought I was somebody they would like to have, so that's the way it goes.
And you've got over 1,200 members now, is
yes,
that right?
Yes, in Surrey, all in Surrey, and they're split over, probably the majority of them are either in Guildford or in Kingston, but we do have, on our website, we do have a find a solicitor facility that people can actually find somebody near to them who can do the kind of work that they're looking for. So, yes, it's a busy time.
It seemed busy when I looked at your website. Mm-hmm. I had no idea of the breadth of things that were on there, because you've got fundraising activities on there, you've got advice, you've got jobs that are advertised. It's a very comprehensive website.
Well, the thing is, for members, they have to be members of the National Law Society, because that's how they get their practicing certificate. But the local law societies, and there are about 118 of us around the country, are very much like clubs, and we provide affordable training, we put on events, and yes, we do job search and really anything we can to help our members.
There was a very interesting article on there about probate fees and increasing probate fees, which
yes,
I was quite staggered.
Yes, that is quite staggering. And it's something that, unless people really sit up and take notice and do something about it, it will happen in May. Parliament will be asked to approve it, and if they do approve it in May, then I'm afraid that the sort of fees, which now are about £150, could be anything up to £20,000, which is a huge hike. And a lot of people don't realise that's happening. They're just not aware.
And that fee, that is to apply for probate?
It's just to register the probate, yes. So when somebody dies, you apply to register probate, and that's the point at which the fee comes in. And there isn't anything different to what will happen for £150 and what will happen in the future for £20,000. So it's quite scary.
So the solicitors are doing the same amount of work, but they're having to hand over such a huge amount of extra income to the government. Is that right?
The solicitors and the probate registrars are doing the same amount of work. But this is really, in a way, it's a tax on death, but it's also a tax on wealth.
Yeah, of course it is. Yeah. And that comes into effect. It's a banding system, is that right?
It is, yes. So Under 50,000, there is no charge. So if your estate when you die is under 50,000, then there's no charge, which is fine. But then it goes up really very steeply indeed. And I think most people in Surrey will find that that is going to affect them.
Yeah.
And this is a Ministry of Justice
It is. Yes, they did a consultation last year. And despite the huge amount of negativity about doing this, they still decided to go ahead with it, which is why we're getting up in arms.
Obviously, you need signatures to complain or petition this.
Yes, you do.
Individuals, or is it
anybody can do it, anybody. And you don't have to give information about yourself, but this is something that will affect us all at some point, our loved ones or any family, clients, you know, whoever we deal with, really. So it is something that we are really pushing people to do, and you just go online to the petitions government website and just say you want to petition against it. It's really, we've got about 15,000 signatures already. So
and
that's,
you need,
I did.
How many do you need?
We need 10 to get it to be raised as a question, and 100,000 if there's going to be a debate in Parliament about it. And ideally we would like that, but
and that's
we
across
can get
the country.
It really is, we're pushing right across all the local law societies. Some journalists are starting to pick it up, but a lot of people do not realise it's happening. It's not been well publicised.
I'm quite surprised that it hasn't been well publicised because it's a pretty major thing that's going to affect the majority of people at some stage or other.
Yes, indeed.
If someone goes to their MP, presumably a question can be raised in Parliament through the individual MP, or does that need votes as well?
We're encouraging people to write to their MPs and actually to raise the question how this can be happening, and that's also lots of people have come back and said I've written to my MP and so on, and again other local law societies all around the country are encouraging their members to push that.
And so to clarify, this is completely separate from inheritance tax. This is separate from the fees that you will have to pay your solicitor to sort of go through the probate process. This is just about registering. And this is before you've inherited anything. So potentially you could be paying £20,000 before you've inherited your £2 million house.
I think that's the way it's going to go. It is an upfront charge. So
That's quite staggering.
If it was £150, it's probably not an issue. But I think some children who are thinking, we'll get mum and dad's house, suddenly realise they're going to have a massive bill to pay just to register. Could be horrendous.
Absolutely. I mean, I'd like to think you can get all the signatures you need across the country. It's just all about publicising it, isn't it?
I can't believe anybody would be for it. I have no idea why, even apart from the fact that it's going to, you know, create lots of money for the government, why it's even been suggested. But so that's very interesting information that that hopefully the signatures will be got.
Well, if people are having trouble finding it, they can go to the surreylawsociety.org.uk website, and we have got a link direct into the petition and also a page explaining exactly what's happening and the different rates and how that's likely to happen. It's not guaranteed yet, but once May comes along and if Parliament approve it, it will happen.
Okay. Has there been anything much on social media? Because sometimes, you know, things like this appear on Facebook and they just go viral, don't they?
I use social media quite a lot to get messages out, and quite a lot of my colleagues around the country do, and certainly the National Law Society is. But I don't see a great deal happening. You know, it's not trending really.
I'm surprised, actually, because as you say, it's going to affect so many people.
Yeah, but it's scary that it's so close, because you think, well, maybe somebody will pick it up sooner or later, but it's not happening.
Yeah, and no major news stories in the newspaper that you
The Sun and the Sunday Times picked it up last week.
Okay.
I haven't seen any other.
Hopefully that'll mushroom.
So it's in the legal press, but you know, people don't read the legal press.
No,
it
needs a social media kind of angle, or a big splash on the front of the Daily Mail or something, doesn't it? That's what you really need.
Yes, I think also a good understanding that that money is not going to the solicitor, it's actually going to the probate register.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
I think we need the Daily Mail on this one. I mean, you know, they are, you know, the voice of quite often self-righteousness, aren't they? You know?
Yes.
And in this particular case, it will be justified.
Well, we'll be chatting to our friends about it, won't we? So, yeah.
Well, that's two people then.
I know, exactly.
People are horrified when you talk to them. They are absolutely horrified.
Yeah. Speechless is the word. You just, you can't really understand it. And you've been working for the Surrey Law Society for 11 years, mm-hmm. but you've got some big changes afoot.
Yes, I have. I have all my life, and certainly from school, have done voluntary work and worked with the voluntary sector, and the consultancy I have, which manages the Surrey Law Society project, is all about working with community, mostly in an advice sector and support agencies. But I've decided that Surrey Law Society has had as much of me as I can really give now, and that maybe somebody coming in will be fresh and new, so they'll be recruiting for a new chief executive. And I will be returning to spend a bit more time with the voluntary sector, a bit more time with my husband and my kids and my dogs. And I've got loads of things which I do which are taking a bit of a back seat at the moment. I've been learning to play the piano for the last 10 years. Still can't really play anything, so that's a top one for me. And I've just taken up photography, which I'm hopeless at, but hoping I will get better. So lots of things that are going to happen.
Lots of projects.
When I retire.
Was it going to be 11 years, or was it, I'll do this for a year or two and see what I think?
It was definitely, I'll do this for a year or two. With the voluntary sector, often projects are 3 years. So the first year you work like stink and, you know, really get it going. Second year you consolidate everything you've done. Third year for me it's a, what shall I do now? And I said when I started Surrey Law Society, 3 years, is it? But they're such lovely people. And I've really enjoyed my time with them. So it's quite difficult to walk away from it.
You mentioned the voluntary sector. Which particular part of the voluntary sector are you interested in?
It's mostly the advice sector. So I've done a lot of work with people like the law centres, particularly Surrey Law Centre we work with, and welfare rights units, CABs, but also specific support agencies. And I've fairly recently been working with something called Christopher Smile, which is a project to support children with cancer, because children under 18 haven't in the past been provided with the sort of treatment and care that adults get, because children's cancer is usually fatal. So it's not sexy for the drug companies to do these things. So Christopher Smile, because they, little Christopher sadly was a victim of that, and so his parents set up this charity. So I've done some work with people like that. It feels good. It's nice to do. They're nice people, and you know, if I can help to raise funds or help with a business plan, then that's the sort of work that I like doing. I'm looking for more of that. I've got some lined up already, because the minute people knew that I was packing up Surrey Law Society, they were like, "Oh, could you help us?"
Yeah, sure.
Which is fine. I don't mind.
Just going back however many years, I know you studied at Birkbeck. I'm interested to know what you studied, because, you know, you've been on, you're not a lawyer, but you've got lots of different experience, and you're offering a lot to lots of different types of companies, charities, businesses, whatever. What's been your sort of route to sort of where you are now?
Again, it's kind of a long story. The first half of my career was spent in Lycra doing workout. I was a fitness trainer. Just until I was 40, when I suddenly thought, do you know, the Lycra really is not now what I want to be doing. And I went to university, because I wasn't able to go as a teenager.
Mature student.
So I went as a mature student to Birkbeck. I was working at the time with Westminster Association of Mental Health, and my supervisor there said, you'd be so good at this, do it. And so I went along thinking, oh, I'm going to be a gran, and discovered that everyone there was like me, holding on a job, family, and doing this as well. I took a very lowly job as a classroom support assistant, so I could have school holidays with my son and do my degree. And I was doing training in the evening for psychology and sociology.
Wow.
Good combo. Okay. I did a bit of that.
Did you?
Yeah.
I didn't want to do the sociology, and I loved it.
Oh, I did too.
I really loved it.
Sue, it's the at this stage of the programme, we normally ask our guests for any advice that they want to give to the listeners, or do you think we've done that already?
Because I think there's loads of advice on the Surrey Law Society website if you're looking for a lawyer.
Yeah.
But I would say, really, from my experience, that life has been a bit of a roller coaster for me. It's been up and down, and I've had to adapt and adjust and deal with things that I wasn't kind of expecting. And I think the advice would be just to get back in there and try and find something you enjoy doing or that you're good at, and just get on with it.
Thanks very much, Sue. That's really good advice. That was Sue Seekins, CEO of the Surrey Law Society. I'd like to thank all of our guests today on Just Women. That's Bev Wilkinson, Zoe Payne and Sue Seekins. And also a huge thanks to my co-presenter, Anne Twist.
Thank you, Sharon. And just to say, we're always keen to hear about local women with interesting lives. So if you know of someone who you think should be on our show, then please email us at justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk with their contact details, and we'll get in touch with them.
It would be great if you could get them on a future show. Details of our past and future guests are on our website, which is brooklandsradio.co.uk/justwomen. You can also find us on Facebook under Just Women at Brooklands Radio. Thanks again for listening. Please join us again next week for Just Women. That's live 1 p.m. on Tuesday, repeated at 8 p.m. on Thursday. It's goodbye from me, Sharon Finch.
And it's goodbye from me, Anne Twist.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk, or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklands Radio. Just Women is just what you need.